Mormonism. And while Paula is going to give us some introductory remarks, I know that she's looking forward to your contributions, questions, and so on. So we'll let you go ahead and lead off, Paula.
I think talking about will kind of be easier than this. I thought I'd be talking to just win a program in a few weeks, but I guess it's okay that I'm doing it sooner because last week I was at my parents' house and my dad's an alcoholic and just got out of treatment, and I spent a lot of time talking with both my mom and he about it, so it's kind of fresh in my mind now. I'll just say a few things about alcoholism, not because I'm an expert on it, but because the disease has had an effect on my life, and not because I'm an alcoholic, but because my dad is. Just a few things to start. I feel like I've learned a lot from the disease of alcoholism, and a lot hasn't been fun, but I'm thanked for it in some ways, and I think it's helped give me kind of a compassion or a warm feeling for people who are alcoholics that I wouldn't have had before. I'm also really lucky, as children of alcoholics go, that my dad wasn't violent or physically abusive in any way. I don't know how long he drank, and I don't know how long it was from when he just had a drink every now and then to when he had to have one all the time. And I remember before he went into treatment the first time, seeing him in the chair asleep, where he always was, and there was a little bottle stuck in his sock. And I remember thinking it was so sad that he was that desperate and got to the point where he had to have it all the time. And it makes me feel sad with a lot of alcoholics that are just trapped that way. So I guess I have some strong feelings about that, just because I feel so sad for so many people who are trapped in it. And kind of in our society, in the past it's changing now, but it's been thought of as something that's immoral, and if you're an alcoholic, you're an evil person, and a poor character. But they're finding now that it's a disease. Diabetes is a disease. Alcoholism is a disease. Now, there is a difference between people who abuse alcohol. Those people have a choice. But there are people who are alcoholics, and once they start drinking, they lose their choice. They can't not drink because their body's physically addicted to it. Some people are allergic to wheat and milk, and when they have those things, their body doesn't react normally. It doesn't metabolize the things the same way. When some people take alcohol, when they've had enough of it, their body doesn't react normally, doesn't metabolize it. My dad's also a doctor, and he explained to me that this is one of the explanations, is that alcohol will change to like acid, aldehyde, to acetic acid, than to CO2 and water in a normal metabolism. But in people who are alcoholics, and they think that it's hereditary, alcohol will change to acetic acid, aldehyde, to acetic acid, and then part of it will break off and form a chemical called THIQ. And the THIQ chemical becomes very, very addicting, and they say that it's even more addicting than heroin and morphine. And the body gets used to having that, and it can't not have it. They'll go through tremors and withdrawals and pass out on the floor, and they need to have it. And so to become people who are alcoholics have to just learn not to have that, learn to live without it. And so if someone is an alcoholic and then goes through treatment and recovers and gets used to not having that, not having anything to drink, they can't just take one drink, because if they do, they'll go exactly back to where they were when they stopped drinking. They won't start at the beginning again. They'll pick up where they left off, or maybe even worse. It's like the body has this memory that keeps on going. Anyway, I talked about the difference between people who abuse it and people, they have choices. They can not drink, they can drink moderately, or they can get drunk. And they probably don't have the same kind of metabolism that you become addicted to it, like people who are alcoholics. There's a book, really good book that I just read, called No Laughing Matter, and it's by Father Joseph Martin, who himself was an alcoholic, and he was a priest, and it seems out that alcoholism is pretty prevalent in, much and a large percent of the population, but also high among doctors and lawyers and dentists and priests and things. He has a good introduction that I'll just read part to you. The book is called No Laughing Matter. My belief is that the disease of alcoholism is the most terminal of all terminal illnesses. I also believe that alcoholism is the most prevalent disease in the United States today. Over 10 years ago, the government estimated there were 9 million alcoholics in the country, but I believe there may be 2 or 3 times that. Unless they are treated, they will die of their disease. Alcoholism is one of the oldest illnesses known. It is also one of the most complex. We don't even know what causes it. It is one of the most complete. It affects every system of the body, and it affects the mind, the emotions, and the soul. It's the most devastating. It hurts all who live with it or come in contact with it. But the disease can be successfully treated. It can't be cured, but it can be treated. And many patients can recover and go on to lead happy, productive lives, and often are some of the strongest in helping other alcoholics. The disease concept gives alcoholics the magnificent news that they are sick rather than evil. That is, while their behavior may be immoral, the disease is not. They didn't choose to become an alcoholic. It's a disease they have. This realization is the key to recovery, for I further believe that sick people want to get well, and alcoholics are sick people, and they do want to get well. They can't make the choice by themselves, but they don't like being trapped. A few other comments he makes in the beginning chapters are how prevalent it is, and it's the number one health problem. And the impact of alcohol misuse and alcoholism is tremendous. At least 1/3 of all suicides are alcoholics. And which also reminds me, the x-ray technician that works at my dad's office, just last week when I was home, the week before that, my parents came up to work, and his truck was parked outside the building, and he was inside, and he'd shot himself, and he'd been an alcoholic, and never, he just needed help, and he planned it, and my parents found him here, and that was kind of another shock of last week. It just kind of, it's everywhere. A large percent of violent crime is alcohol-related. Many, many families break up due to drinking. Over 1/2 of all car accidents are alcohol-related. Cirrhosis of the liver, for example, is 8th on the list of fatal diseases, and seven of eight cases of that are the result of alcoholism. There's a high percentage of alcoholism in, with doctors and dentists and lawyers, and some say at least 25% in industry and people like that repair commercial airlines and things. There's just a high percentage everywhere. I think more and more companies are starting alcohol programs in them, which I think is really wonderful. So it's a reality that touches all of us. One of every 4 Americans lives with or is intimately connected with an alcoholic, like son and daughter, mother, father, brother, sister, spouse, friend. So it's safe to assume that you know. Somewhere between 5 to 10% of all adult Americans are alcoholics, and no one knows how many are in the early stages of it. They don't know for sure, but it seems, and some people say that, I don't know how true it is, but that everyone has the potential for being an alcoholic And different people come to the point where they can't stop drinking at different times in their life. That time, it might be that you die of old age before you ever got to that point. But for other people, they would drink some and their body is saturated by an early age, like there are 7 and 8 year olds that are alcoholics just because they got to that point and their bodies are addicted to it. So I don't know, I haven't read a lot about that. Other people, it's later in their life. Whether the number is as low as 5 million or as high as 36 or more, every one of the alcoholics affects on the average of 6 other people around them. So, in other words, well over half of all Americans are touched somehow by the disease. Because like, it's a family disease. It's not just doesn't just affect the one person in the family, it affects everyone. It changes the way they react, the way they think, their emotions, and everything. And, I feel like I've been affected by it a lot. I've been affected by alcoholism as much through my mom, who's not an alcoholic, as by my dad, who is. Like I said, my dad wasn't violent. He would go to sleep, and he just wasn't around. If I talked to him, he never really paid attention. I never thought that he really cared. So I would bother talking to him, and I never really known him that well. And but my mom was always so worried about everything, and she depended on me to help take care of the family and to raise my brothers and to take care of the business and the financial end, and really leaned on me a lot. And so there's a family dynamics in alcoholism where children take on different roles. Like there's the clown who just is really funny and makes everyone laugh to keep things happy. And there's the person who withdraws and just totally withdraws from the situation. And then there's the one who becomes the responsible child. There might be others too, but anyway, I became the responsible child, taking care of everyone and keeping my mom happy and trying to keep my dad happy or something. If he drank, then I felt that I was responsible for that. That was my fault. And if my mom wasn't happy, then I felt that I hadn't done something or I'd done too much. And if my brothers weren't happy, then I hadn't done a good enough job of taking care of them. And I guess I felt that if anything went wrong, that it really was my fault. And my mom depended on me, not like a daughter at all, just like a friend. And she would talk to me and complain to me about everything, but I couldn't tell anybody else about it. Because if I did, then someone else would find out, and that wouldn't be good. It had to be kept in the family. Maybe you've seen the commercial with the elephant in the living room. There's one on TV about alcoholism, and it just shows this house with this elephant walking through the living room and asks, you know, if you have one. And we had an elephant in our living room, and it's the alcoholic, and everyone knows it's there, but everyone denies it. No one talks about it. You walk around it and you'll pick up after it and take care of it, but you won't talk about it, but it's there. And we had one living in ours for a long time. We'd make up excuses for why Dad couldn't do this or that or couldn't go with us and say he was sick or whatever. But we could never talk about it. And so that brings you to kind of the last part is Alcohol Anonymous, AA, and Al-Anon, which is the part for people who are not alcoholics. And like I said, listening to my mom and feeling burdened by all her problems and things and not being able to tell anybody else was really hard for me. Once I did tell a friend, and she was absolutely furious, and I'll never forget how much that hurt. But then recently I've gone to ACOA, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics. And it's a place where you can go and you can talk about feelings and your past and present, and people are there to listen, and they care. And it's people helping each other, just like AA is for people who are alcoholics. It's people helping people, and they care and they listen, and one of the things they say is, what you say here stays here, and you can say what you want, and there isn't gossip outside of that. They really respect it. They also say that what you say now is true for now. It may not be true it may not have been true yesterday, it may not be true tomorrow, but it's true right now, so you accept whatever anybody says. Going to Adult Children of Alcoholics really helped me a lot to deal with feelings and about both of my parents and the whole situation. And one thing I felt when I went there is that people were so warm and caring that they'd never seen me before, didn't know who I was, and I felt really welcomed, and they would give me their names and phone numbers and say, call if you have any trouble, or if you ever want to talk, just give me a call. And very, very caring people. And it seems that that these groups really reinforce the work of the church, or in some cases what the church means to do is as much as anything. It's just people helping people. Some of you probably heard of the 12 steps in alcoholism, and they read those every time. One of them is, have a lot of people heard of the 12 steps in alcoholism? You can just read them now. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol that changed our lives, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, some people can't just talk of that as God, and others can't say that it's God, and so they say it's a higher power. And there are even some that don't say it's a higher power, but they do believe in the power of the group, and they keep coming because they believe that the power of the group can help give them the strength. And which is kind of neat too, because it's God expresses his love through people. Number three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Number eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to. Number nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Number 10, continued to take personal inventory of when we were wrong and promptly admitted it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry this out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And one of the things that I've heard also in going to this and at AA that I've heard through my dad is they say, let us love you until you are able to love yourself. And which is really helpful for alcoholics because they tend to have really low self-esteem. And it's one of the things that will start them drinking again is that they feel so bad about themselves. It's not physical pain isn't as bad for them as the mental and emotional pain that they feel. It hurts so much that they drink to cover that up, and once they drink, and they keep on drinking, and then they said they can't not drink because their body needs it, is addicted to it. But so the AA and the Al-Anon help them to deal with the feelings about themselves and face them and not try and hide them or numb them. So going to them helped me realize that with my dad's disease, I didn't cause it, and I can't control it, and I can't cure it. And that was kind of a nice thing to realize. And I don't know if I'm thankful for it. In some ways, it's made me a better person because it's helped me understand other people and understand myself too, my own feelings and emotions about certain things. And it's helped my dad too with, well, he just got out of treatment again for the third time. But this time, it was good to see him because he's better than he was. He's more relaxed. He quit. It's not like white knuckle sobriety, I think now. I think he's on his way to really getting better. And I said he's a doctor, and I think it will help him. He can reach a lot more people being an alcoholic, because when they come in to see him, he'll look at the situations, and the doctor that he works with tends to prescribe a lot of medication, but he will go beyond that and kind of ask them, well, what are your drinking patterns, and talk with them about that, because a lot of illnesses are caused by alcoholic, and you can kind of cover that up with, and then if you get medication on top, then you have drug and alcohol addiction. And he'll tell them, and he has in the past too, if he suspects that they are alcoholic, he'll say, well, I'm an alcoholic. And the fact that he tells them that he is establishes a trust that wouldn't have developed otherwise. And, I mean, if it helps one person to, you know, to have someone that they can trust and get help through, then it would be kind of worth it with something. I mean, I don't know if I have a lot more to say about it. Maybe if other people have anything they want to comment on or add or share. Questions? Anything?
Paula?
Yes?
At one point I'd heard that an alcoholic can't be helped unless he or she wants help.
Uh-huh.
And more recently I've been hearing that the family can intervene and do all that. And from your meetings, have you had experience with both people that have had both experiences?
Yeah, because at some point, like Mom would say, that you have to, or that people have to get low enough. They have to get so low that they want to not drink again. Like whether that's being put in jail for drunk driving or losing their license for something or what. But then in this book that I've been reading, No Laughing Matter, sometimes they're so low and they don't know that they are, that they're that low. And they'll drink, but then someone will ask if they've been drinking, and they'll deny it. And they honestly believe that they weren't drinking. It's really hard for them to ask for help. Like with my dad, I think the fact, like when he had the bottle of whatever in his sock, it seemed like he really wanted help. He wanted it, but he couldn't ask for it, and so we intervened. And I think in a lot of cases it's important for people around to help them before they get so low that they do something like shoot themselves. They kind of don't know how to ask. Yes?
How did you first intervene?
Then when that first time was when we saw it and just confronted him and said, look, why do you have this? You know, maybe we want you to get some help. And at Christmas, they intervened again and said, look, you've been drinking. And my dad denied it and said no. And then we had a counselor come. And there's a person who helps a lot of doctors and goes around and will take urine samples just to see, to check on him. And this person came and talked with my dad and took a urine sample and called right back and said it's positive. And so we need to have evidence and say, look, this is what you did, or this is what happened, and kind of as a proof to them, because they can't deny that. And if you are confronting someone, you need to offer them help. You can't just say, you're drinking too much, you're doing this or that, the other thing. It needs to be just very matter of fact and give them an option saying, you can get help this way. And so he went to Puget Sound Hospital, has an alcohol treatment program that's really good. Well, there's a lot of hospitals that have good treatment programs. Better than, like there's a lot of ads for like chic and shock treatment type things, which may work for a while, but alcoholism is so tied with the emotions and other things that that doesn't help those problems and low self-esteem. And the pain part they'll forget. It's the mental pain is what causes more anguish.
Paula, did I understand you to say at the beginning that there's present thinking is that it may well be hereditary?
Yeah.
Have you heard very much on that?
I don't know a lot, but just a little bit. They found, there's a person who was doing some studies on when people were heroin addicts were dead, she would go and take brain samples and study them and found the chemical differences in them. And then others, people who have been adopted, they've had adopted children in normal families, and the adopted child would be alcoholic, or maybe if everyone that was alcoholic and the adopted child wasn't, but there have been several of those kinds of studies to show that. And it's quite possible, but they don't know for sure.
If the feeling is that it's hereditary, then how does the low self-esteem fit the pattern?
Part of hereditary could be the family dynamics part too, because it's such a family disease that it would kind of encourage itself, that you feel like, you know, your dad doesn't love you, and so you don't love yourself, and
well, that can perpetuate itself as well.
Yeah. And it seems they found that people who are alcoholics or come from that family gravitate towards other alcoholics. They develop patterns of living. They're used to reacting a certain way around that type of personality, and so that's what they're comfortable with, and that's what the stories that I've read in some of the books too, is alcoholics are really creative with their drinking. Sometimes they'll hide like clear bottles in the backs of toilets, and so you can get drinks that way. I mean, they're so desperate, they'll do a lot of different things. And I remember reading about one person who took the washer wiper fluid out of the bag in the front of the car and refilled it with alcohol and had a little straw out there, and so he'd be driving along and, oh, something's wrong with the car, I gotta go up and check it, open the hood and take a drink and come back. And, I mean, incredibly creative things, but it's really sad. It's just they were so desperate that they had to. And I think my dad drank the most, really started drinking when we never saw him drink, when he wouldn't have one outright. Then, that was the scary part, then he was drinking a lot. I mean, we'd find little bottles a lot of different places, and that's the scary part. Closet drinkers. And a lot of people drink out of guilt. In that book I was reading, it talked about how people's attitudes and cultures and religions, they're trying to make a comparison by how much people drank in different religions and cultures. And on those cultures that condoned alcoholism, and it was kind of a funny thing, there was a high percentage. And then those cultures that it was all alcohol was totally forbidden, so any drinking was done out of guilt, also had a high percentage. But the cultures and religions that said alcohol was okay and they used it normally but would not tolerate drunkenness had a lower percentage. But anyway, the problem of guilt is the thing. And that's why another thing about families where their alcoholics maybe tend to perpetuate themselves would be that it's done out of guilt, then it's that causes more of a problem. Then that not done normally.
Doesn't scripture say something about all things in moderation?
Probably.
Paula?
Yeah.
Did you say anything about personality, types of personality characteristics that often go with the alcohol?
I remember reading a lot about before that one was low esteem, and when I went to ACOA, they were talking about different people had different stories to tell about the people they knew or their families, and lots of times they were very, very sensitive, caring people. Very, very sensitive, almost too much so that they just couldn't deal with things, and so they would drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I heard too, is a very sensitive part.
Yeah.
Kind of a lot of times. Uh-huh. Very, very sensitive.
Yeah, and this one lady I was talking about, she was like, keep coming back to alcoholics, and she'd known 10 different, had 10 different relationships, and she was, why everyone is an alcoholic? And she was the nicest people, the most caring, nicest people, and she goes, I mean, I love them, but they just fall apart.
How would a family distinguish between, say, one member, whether they were an alcoholic or whether that person was abusing alcohol?
I don't know. Probably if, whether or not they could stop if they start having to have it in the morning, and if they have tremors if they don't drink.
Yeah,
and,
the
I guess so.
Yeah. I think there are checklists that you can use out there to.
Yeah, I think there's one in the back of one of these books I have. There's another one. I mean, if anyone wants to look at them, they can. I'll leave them out. I'll Quit Tomorrow is one. Bob Baker has a couple you can look at. This one, Adult Children of Alcoholics, is kind of good. And then these are daily books, One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. And it's just something to read every day. And then at the end, there's a Bible verse or a quote from something. And then kind of encouragement to deal with emotions and feelings and self-esteem. This one is for alcoholics. It's called A Day at a Time. You've probably seen bumper stickers that say One Day at a Time or Easy Does It or Let Go and Let God. Those are alcoholics. It's some of the things that they live by, and it helps them.
Does ACLC deal with what you're saying about heredity influencing, and therefore are they helping the kids to not to be sensible about alcohol, or do they even focus on that at all?
More it deals with just the feelings mm-hmm. that people have and deal with them, because there's a lot of people like going there. I even felt lucky because I hear some of the stories that people had to tell, and you just feel so bad or so sad, the things that they've been through, and just to get those feelings out, because like I didn't have anyone to talk to before, and just saying it helped, and to have someone else say, no, you're okay, it's not your fault, was that kind of support group.
Do the kids of alcoholics then, do they worry about whether or not they can drink at all?
So I know that it's possible it's hereditary, and knowing some of the situation, I'm careful about it, and I think about it myself, wondering, you know, would I be? And mm-hmm. and just watch myself and stuff. Talking about ACO, this might help. It's something that they read at the beginning of meetings that kind of give you a feel about that. It says, by attending Children of Alcoholics meetings on a regular basis, we learn that we can live our lives in a more meaningful manner. We learn to change our attitudes, old patterns, habits, and find serenity, even happiness. We learn that alcoholism is a threefold disease, mental, physical, and spiritual, and our parents were victims of this disease. This is the beginning of the gifts of forgiveness and compassion. We learn to focus on ourselves, to be good to ourselves. We learn to detach with love, sometimes tough love. We learn to use the slogans, let go and let God, easy does it, one day at a time, keep it simple in others. We learn to feel our feelings, to accept and express them. We learn how to build our self-esteem. Through working the 12 steps in our programs, we learn to accept the disease. We realize that our lives have become unmanageable, that we are powerless over the disease and the alcoholic. As we become willing to admit our defects and our sick thinking, we are able to change our attitudes and our reactions. By working the program daily, we come to believe in the spirituality of the program, that there is a solution other than our will, be it the group, a higher power, or God as we understand God. By sharing our experiences, relating to others, welcoming newcomers, serving our groups, we build our self-esteem. We learn to love ourselves, and because of this, we are able to love, help others in a healthy way. We use the phone list for support at all times, not just for problems.
Paula,
yeah.
This treatment that your dad has been through, does that involve the family too?
Yeah, it does. And probably one reason why he's better now is that my mom's been a lot more involved in it. Because other times, if she wasn't as involved, even when he got home, she had the same way of thinking, always suspecting. Every time, if she'd go out and he was home alone, as soon as she came in, she was suspecting him, and she'd look, you know, like, wonder, well, I wonder if he's been drinking, or maybe he's acting kind of this way. And so then he'd feel defensive about it, and he didn't ever feel trusted. And it's hard to trust someone if you've known them for years and years and years where you couldn't. And so by being in it together has helped a lot. Yeah, it really encourages family.
But did it involve your children at this
point? Since we were older and weren't around, not as much. I went, one time I was home and I went to one meeting with them. And it turned out to be good because I said some things to my dad that I'd never said before. Because there were other counselors there and I wouldn't have done it without the counselors drawing it out. And I was scared and I cried a lot, but my dad appreciated that I said those things. And so, yeah, as much as possible, it involves the whole family.
My niece is an alcoholic. When she was a senior in high school, within a few months of her graduation, she left her diary open on the bed. I don't know that she knows that she purposely did it, but I'm pretty sure that she did. My sister read it, and out of that, they were able to get her into treatment. But a big part of that was that my sister and her husband, the parents, were also being counseled. And then after they had their sessions, and Marjorie had sessions, and then coming together and, as you say, sharing feelings and mm-hmm. being open, and that seems to have been a real blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And healing.
Yeah.
Is anyone in the group here familiar with, so often my associations with anyone that is confronted with alcoholism is that they eventually find help generally through AA and Al-Anon and so on. But is anyone familiar with congregations that are providing a supportive role? Has your father found within the congregation?
In our congregation, pastors really weren't very aware of it, the pastors that we had before, and were really surprised when my dad talked about it. And in some ways, they seemed like they still had the old attitude towards it. But there are a lot that are, and most Al-Anon AAs are held in churches, you know, because that's the space that they have. But they're not churches. I don't know.
One concern I have, and that holds true, that we as our Christian community can create the atmosphere where it's all right not to drink, that we can encourage situations mm-hmm. where
socially, there isn't the pressure to drink for the alcoholic. We encourage drinking by not caring enough to realize that we should show that there are alternatives and that we can have a good time without.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what you were saying about making fun and we joke about it to a point where maybe we're actually making it difficult for someone.
Yeah, it's nice there's not the media here with all the advertising and pushing. It's also good though, more and more companies, there's a lot more like sparkling ciders and beverages that are non-alcoholic. Some alcoholics can't even drink anything that comes in a bottle though, just because the association is too strong. But it's nice that there are options like that. And like my parents have sparkling cider, I can't a lot. This is non-alcoholic. So kind of, and it seems like bars and places are serving some more. It might be coming. It's probably a disease as it is more and more recognized as a disease rather than as evil people. Maybe that will come.
The only thing is some have this dreadful personality changes that reflect they are not evil. Your father apparently doesn't have it.
Under the influence of drink.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
My brother,
so that would increase the association.
And when he drank, he was so mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. But
he hasn't had a drink, but it's a struggle. Even your father hasn't got it. And it's a struggle.
It always will be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of along with what June said, I've always felt that one of the things we can do is not make it seem that the only way that one can be sociable and fun is to drink. I often felt the times that I've been around drinking people that many people who do not drink are more tolerant of drinkers than drinkers are of non-drinkers. Did you understand that? There's always trying to, come on, why not? What's wrong with you, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of scary when you think that possibly many people have potential that we make it such a thing that everyone should do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe especially in people in early stages. I think in the later stages of drinking, they're going to drink if they're upset, they're going to drink if they're tired, they're going to drink if their team won, they're going to drink if their team lost, they're going to drink if the team didn't play. And they're going to drink no matter what. They don't need any excuse because they have to have the drink.
Do you remember when there wasn't an elephant in your arena?
I don't know. Not really, I guess. I don't know how early my dad started drinking, but I do know that when Laura was talking about dreams, it occurred to me that I had this dream when I was like really young, 7 or 8. And I only had the dream once, but since then, the dream would come to mind. I just had this picture in my mind, and it was in the backyard of our house, and my dad was standing out there in boxer shorts, and there was this giant bear in front of him, this huge bear. And I remember thinking, stupid dream, go away, why am I thinking of it? And then I forget it, and I can't remember how many times a year that dream has come to my mind, how many times a month or whatever. I would just have that picture, and I always thought, this is really stupid, I don't understand. But it occurred to me that the bear was alcoholism, and he was very vulnerable, and it's always there, and he's always fighting it. And
I haven't thought about it that much recently, but it's always been around, and that makes me think that maybe it's been around since I was pretty young. I think probably, I don't know if it was always as bad as it has been recently, but now it seems like almost 16 years has to be helped a lot.
Is AA an American thing, or like Russell, is that familiar in English?
Yeah.
Or? We don't have any affiliations with anything else, no advertising. We are operating strictly to help the people in it. And they'll never support, to be affiliated with anything else. Because that would take away from it. They don't want any publicity at all.
Is it also one of the very few organizations that manages to do with a real formal hierarchy?
Yeah, it is, definitely.
They're coming from the restaurant field. There's a certain way of advertising done within restaurants, mostly bars. There's a study that prime people to enhance drinking, there's certain colors you can use within your lounge.
Oh,
and the atmosphere is created, a lot of sports. You put sports pictures or TVs with sports channels. A lot of lounges are doing that now where they have these big screen TVs for sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's a prime enhances the drink more and more. That's why they do it, create more business. Also in the magazine advertising, most of your hard liquor advertising will have subliminals. They're still fighting that in the courts right now. They took it off from TV where they could prove that they had like naked people or violence within a couple of segments in the film, and they pulled it. And now they're still fighting in courts on magazine ads where they will have it like in the ice. There will be something ultra-violent or sex connotation just to click the subliminal in your mind to look at that. I think drinking, you see that even in the wording, if you read some of the words, they don't make a lot of sense, but they'll usually have sex right in it. To grab the attention of the drinking.
Play with like compounds and music right before coming home. They're very also good that or maybe that thing tight in the paper.
I always thought from a nurse's standpoint, a lot of times we would get patients in the hospital where they wouldn't tell us if they were alcoholics or family or even friends, and everybody knew that this person drank too much or was alcoholic. And they wouldn't tell us, and there's delirium tremens that people go through. Did you see 15% of people can die of cardiac arrest? And if people would just know ahead of time, if staff would just know ahead of time, if something like that, you can know.